Welcome back to A View from the Couch. My name is Rich.
And I'm Jen.
And today we will continue season two of the new View from a Couch. We are doing tax season movies. And the third movie in our little... Is this third movie? This is our fourth movie. Yeah. That's right. This is the fourth movie in our little jaunt through tax associated movies.
I'll forgive you. We've been busy.
Yeah, it's been a little busy. So, brain fried. We're talking about Stranger Than Fiction, which is a movie from 2006 that some of you may not even really know exists.
I did not.
Yeah, it's not one of those ones that was a big splash. It was more like a little drop in the pan. And I know I saw it when it came out.
I'm not surprised.
And I really liked it. I wasn't expecting a dramatic turn from Will Ferrell.
Yeah, because he was doing like Talladega Nights and stuff like that around this time.
Yeah, this is definitely not his typical film role.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this isn't just straight drama. There is some comedy here, but it's not your typical, you know, college humor, Will Ferrell comedy, you know?
Yeah, I feel like this is drama, comedy, and romance, but none of it's like really heavy into it, so it's kind of a nice mix of everything,
I think. It's a rom-com?
Sure.
Sure.
That's a mouthful.
Well, it's like zom-rom-com, which is what Shaun of the Dead is.
Oh, okay. Zombie I've never even comedy. Heard that.
Oh, yeah.
To us that
no, it's a zom-rom-com. Yeah, that's just, wait, when we get to it and we're doing research on it, then, oh, wait, you're not going to do research on it, are you? Never mind. So you didn't even know this movie existed, huh?
I did not. So when we were trying to put together the, I think you brought it up and I'm like, what is that movie?
So this might not be our most popular episode ever is what we're saying. But
probably not. Some people will be like, what the heck?
But I will tell you this. This is one of those movies that if you give it a shot, you might actually enjoy it.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So can you think of any other roles that Will Ferrell has done? I almost said Will Smith. That Will Ferrell has done, different actor guys, that are dramatic roles? I can't think of a single one. I'm sure he's done stuff that I'm not aware of, but like everything that I can think of him in has been a comedy. Since we watched this movie for this episode, I've been trying to think... What have I seen him in that could be considered dramatic comedy like this? And I only come up with one. It's a little thing called Everything Must Go. It's about a dude that loses his job because he's an alcoholic or something like that. And like he's got to get rid of all the stuff in his house. And it's different. It's not quite like this movie. There's a little bit more of a... There's been a bit more of a nihilistic feel to it than that, so.
Yeah, I'm kind of browsing through his IMDb, and it's a lot of comedy stuff.
Yeah, like straight comedy stuff, right?
Yeah, it's
I think comedy, Will Ferrell, comedy, I comedy, think yeah. Talladega Nights or Blades of Glory or Semi-Pro or Ron Burgundy in Anchorman, you know? That's what I think of him as.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's what he does. I mean, that's what he's known for. So, I don't know. I can't think of anything else.
I can't either. I mean, he was even in Barbie, but he played a comedy role in that.
Oh, yeah. He was a comedic character in that, too. Yeah. I don't know. Well, let's put that on the back burner and let's kind of reexamine that as we go.
Okay.
But why don't you give us the cast and crew and then we can jump into the rest of the movie.
All right. So this was directed by Mark Forster. Was written by Zach Helm. It stars Will Ferrell as Harold Crick, Emma Thompson as Karen Eiffel. We have Dustin Hoffman in here as Professor Jules Hilbert.
Mm-hmm.
Maggie, is it Gyllenhaal?
That is exactly what it
is. Okay. I think I always know it's Gyllenhaal, but then when I go to say it, I'm always like, wait, is it
It's like GIF versus GIF,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
She plays Miss Pascal, or Anna Pascal.
Miss Pascal.
And Queen Latifah is in here as Penny Escher.
Yeah. Now, Emma Thompson, were you an Emma Thompson fan years past, or is that Is that a newer thing because of Harry Potter, or?
I couldn't even name anything she's been in other than Harry Potter and Love Actually.
Yeah, it makes sense because she is in a lot of like Shakespearean stuff with Kenneth Branagh in the 90s. So
would not care about that
would not
at
be
all.
Your, yeah, wouldn't but, be your thing.
But anything I have seen her in or when I've seen her do interviews and stuff, and she seems super awesome.
She's
like
a fantastic
she
actor.
Seems like a really cool person.
Yeah.
But she's not one that I like gravitate towards because I just haven't seen her in a lot of stuff. So
right now, what about Mark Forster? Do you recognize him?
No, I don't recognize the writer or the director here.
So Mark Forster did World War Z. It's where you probably know
really?
Him from.
Okay.
Yeah, he's been everywhere. This guy has done lots of stuff. He also did Quantum of Solace, which is like one of the lesser considered Bond movies from the Daniel Craig era. People don't like that one as much, but I liked it. More recently, he did a movie called The Man Called Otto with Tom Hanks.
You're getting all these names mixed up.
I am. I'm all over the place. And do you remember the movie Monsters Ball with Halle Berry?
Oh, yeah.
And
didn't
Billy
that
Bob
have
Thornton?
Like some Oscar stuff going on?
Yeah,
with that
it,
one
it
too?
Had. Yeah, it had the Joker guy, Heath Ledger, in it. And there's a lot of racism stuff that was dealt with, and it was an interracial relationship with a guy who was racist. It was a very interesting movie, but he did that one. That's the one that like kind of was his not first movie, I don't think. I'm sure he did other stuff before that, but this was the one that everybody kind of took notice of him on that.
Sure.
So he's kind of like one of those directors that puts in good work, and you know, people don't. You know, he doesn't raise a fuss, I guess. Mm-hmm. Probably one of those gets it in, gets it on time kind of guys, you know?
Yeah. So. Could be. Let's talk about the story. I'm excited to talk about this one.
Yeah, let's dive in. Okay, so IRS agent Harold Crick lives a solitary existence, one of routine and predictability all the way down to the most minute details. For example, he brushes his teeth the same way every morning, counting the brush strokes. And it's on a seemingly random Wednesday that Harold begins to hear a voice narrating his life.
So, real quick here.
Yeah.
This whole beginning, he reminds me of what you would think of an IRS agent as with me. Now, guessing they are not all like that. I've met my fair share. I've talked to so many on the phone over the years. I don't even know how many. I would guarantee they are not all like this. But from an outside party, thinking of an IRS agent, you would think very straight-laced, number person, very routine, just nothing too outlandish or crazy that happens with these people.
So you might say that this is a stereotypical representation of an IRS
Absolutely.
Agent.
Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah. When Harold's usually reliable wristwatch stops working, he asks a fellow bus rider at a bus stop for the time, and the narrator mentions that this seemingly banal act will result in Harold's death, which is it's the first point where you're like, this could get really weird, right?
Right, right.
Like, it's weird enough that there's somebody narrating his life,
mm-hmm.
but to be like, and he's gonna die, and his reaction is actually great. You know, Will
yes.
Ferrell's reaction to this is fantastic.
So while filming this movie, Will Ferrell actually wore an earpiece that fed him Emma Thompson's lines.
Oh, cool.
So that way nobody else could hear it. So he could hear what was being said. Actors could not, so they were just responding to what he was
responding to. Yeah. His actions. That's great because there are some interesting interactions that he has with people. Like he said something like Harold Crick thought it was just an ordinary Wednesday, and I love the way she says Wednesday. She doesn't say Wednesday. She says Wednesday. Wednesday. I love the way she says it. It's very British. Very British way of saying it. Anyway, he asks one of the other people there, he says, did you hear that voice, the one that said that Harold Crick thought it was just an ordinary Wednesday? And the lady's like, it is Wednesday.
Yeah.
It's a great little interaction. And she's like, who the hell's Harold Crick? And he's like, I'm Harold Crick. She's like, Harold, it's Wednesday. It's fine.
It's like, okay.
Okay, all right. Fair enough. Harold goes about his day unnerved and confused by the narration that seemingly only he can hear. At work, he is assigned to audit a baker named Anna Pascal, who has been refusing to pay her full required taxes. Now, she has decided that she's only going to pay the parts that she approves of the spending of.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, she doesn't want to spend it on war. She doesn't want to spend it on corporate bailouts. She wants to spend it on roads or education. So she's only paying that part.
I do like how she thinks writing a note should explain this and she should be fine. So what? One of the things I did like in this movie is the interactions between the IRS agent and the taxpayer.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like I've had some of these conversations with clients of mine. And I'm not an IRS agent, but you know, I prepare taxes. So you have to explain things to people and blah, blah, blah. Number one, the audit triggered by her not paying taxes. I have tons of clients that are late on taxes or haven't paid taxes, and not one of them have been audited. You get late penalty notices if it's really egregious and you're really ignoring it. You know, they could take you to court, they can levy your accounts, they could do that. But I haven't had any that have been audited for that reason. Now, I've done enough audits that it's triggered by other things, but never one has been triggered because they didn't pay their taxes.
It's important to remember, folks, that nothing that you hear on this podcast should be construed as tax advice by either myself or young Jennifer Davenport here. But that's interesting anecdotal information that you have there.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just my experience in all the years. Now, I'm not saying it can't happen.
Right.
But it just...
You've never seen it happen.
I've never seen it happen.
Gotcha.
You know, I mean, they can pull an audit for whatever the heck reason they want to pull an audit for.
Maybe,
you know?
Because they threw a dart at a dartboard and
exactly.
Their name was there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So Harold goes to see a psychologist. And the psychologist suggests that since the delusion is a narrator, he thinks that Harold should visit with a literary expert named Jules Hilbert. Hilbert is kind of wary of the whole thing at first. He's kind of entertaining the idea. And we get to see that this Hilbert character is just as quirky as everybody else in this movie. They have their own quirks. This dude drinks his coffee while he takes a leak in the morning. This dude has a full-on conversation with somebody that just walks into the bathroom with him mm-hmm. while he's taking a leak and, you know, leaves with him without the other guy having done anything.
Right.
Like, just interesting, cute little, not cute, but interesting little tidbits about the kind of person that this guy is. He's mm-hmm. distracted. He's constantly moving to whatever's next.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I find that interesting because this is the guy who's going to later tell Harold, you need to slow down. You need to accept the fate that you're going to have and enjoy what you have left.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So I do find this character to be an interesting foil for Harold in that he is much the same as Harold, but just in a different way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Harold is distracted by the minutiae of every day.
Mm-hmm.
And Jules is distracted by whatever's coming next. He's too busy with whatever's coming next. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than what he's doing right that second.
Yeah.
Hilbert does first reject the idea and dismisses Harold as kind of a loon, but he recognizes the use of an omniscient narrative device. The term, little did he know. Harold says that the narrator used the term, little did he know. And Hilbert says, I wrote a whole paper about little did he know and the use of little did he know as a narrative device.
Mm-hmm.
And this brings him back in. It mm-hmm. grabs his attention. It squirrels him, right?
Mm-hmm.
He works with Harold to try and identify the author. He tells him to document everything that he does and classify these things as either comedy or tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Harold is still in the middle of auditing Anna. And as he's doing this, as he's continuing on, the attraction between them kind of grows stronger. But it hits a bump because Harold one night is wrapping up his audit, or wrapping up his day of auditing, and the only other person in the building is Anna. She has baked cookies, and she wants him to try some.
Mm-hmm.
So he sits down, he has a cookie, or a couple of cookies, and they have a conversation. And then she offers to send cookies home with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he says no, because he thinks that it could be construed as a bribe.
Right, which he's being all on the up and up right now, but I think this is really important for what happens later in the movie to show his character, you know, growth and,
sure.
you know, what he's changing. Because, you know, even at this point when he has this attraction to Anna, and this is a meaningful gesture to him. He's still like, no, 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 got to play it by the books type thing. Mm-hmm. So.
He's still constrained by the narration, mm-hmm. is what it is. Like, the use of the narration isn't just for comedic effect. Mm-hmm. To me, this seems like it is the structure of his life. Do you know what I mean? And that's why we're introduced to it the way we're introduced to it. We're introduced to it as laying out how his life is. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And he's, without listening to it, he's listening to it. Mm-hmm. It's only at the end of that first day that we're seeing the narration that he's like, wait. It's the next morning, right? He's brushing his teeth. And he's like, hold on. I can hear this, mm-hmm. you know? But before that, he couldn't hear it. It was still there, though. It was still present. It was still the thing that was puppeting him. Mm-hmm. He hasn't cut the strings yet. Mm-hmm. When Harold declines the cookies and he sees Anna's, like, disappointment, he realizes what he did. And that's when he makes a decision. He's like, okay, obviously, I'm living a tragedy. Mm-hmm. Right? Jules tells Harold to take a full day off from work and do nothing to see if he's still in control of his own destiny or if the narrator has him in their control, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he does. He sits at home. He does nothing. He sits on the couch and he watches TV. He literally is all he does, even pees into a container, mm-hmm. right? He won't even get up off the couch to do that. Good thing he didn't have to take a dump, right?
Probably.
What, did he have, like, a plate off to the side?
No. Let's
no, we're not
going to
talk. We don't want to talk about that shit.
No,
okay.
That's gross.
All right. That's gross. It's only
that
natural.
Gross.
It's poop. Everybody does it. Everybody poops, Jennifer.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not shitting you, I swear. So, but while this is all going on, a demolition crew smashes in Harold's apartment with their wrecking ball. They were at the wrong address. So even with him doing nothing, there is still peril in his life. So he goes back to Jules, and Jules takes this as Harold not having control. And he tells him to just, hey, enjoy whatever time you've got left. Accept the destiny that the narrator has envisioned for you. Just take some time for you stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the only point where Harold really finally just lets go, right? He mm-hmm. takes a bunch of time off work. He does stuff like learns how to play the guitar. He moves in with his buddy from work.
He goes to see The Meaning of Life.
He goes to see the movie The Meaning of Life, oddly enough, right?
Yeah.
Which I think, first of all, I love Monty Python movies. Meaning of Life is probably my least favorite of the Monty Python movies, but there are points in that movie that are really, really good. Anyway, that aside, interesting that he goes to see The Meaning of Life because he is, at this point, searching for mm-hmm. his life's meaning.
Mm-hmm.
He also starts to form more of a bond with Anna. He brings her flowers, not flowers, but flowers.
I think this is adorable. And I heard somebody talk about this in the aspect that they did this to somebody, brought flowers.
Yeah.
And I think the only way that's appropriate is if that person is a chef or a baker or something
right.
like that. If you brought me flowers, I'd be like, what the hell am I going to do with all this flour? Okay. there's a point. But if it's the right person, this
right.
is super cute. Very adorable. I loved it. And
right.
obviously, Anna was very touched by this too.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it actually, they end up spending the night together.
Mm-hmm.
So this, it worked. Hey, all you had to do was buy her some baking products.
Well, and then sing to her. Because
yes, right.
that was kind of
yeah,
what
right.
pushed it over the edge, I think. So.
That's right. Yep. Yeah. Yep. He did sing to her. He played because she was playing the guitar, or she was learning how to play the guitar too, or something like that.
She said she got it as payment for a wedding cake.
Oh, that's what it was.
And she played it, but very badly.
Right. 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 And he said he was taking lessons, and that's mm-hmm. where that kind of spread. But yeah, that actually really is good. But then when it appears that they are falling in love, that's when Harold decides that he's actually in a comedy, mm-hmm. not in a tragedy.
Yeah.
Meeting with Jules again later to kind of discuss how things were going, Harold sees an interview with a writer named Karen Eiffel, and he recognizes her voice as that of the narrator in his brain. It turns out that Jules is a great admirer of Karen Eiffel's, and he tells Harold that her books are always, always, unequivocally, tragedies. And that the protagonist always dies.
This would not be an author that I would like to read. I can tell you that right now.
Well, okay, but why?
If the person always dies in the books, that's so depressing. I don't want to read depressing books like that all the time. I'm not going to gravitate towards that.
Oh, okay, but think about the way Jules presents this. He says, look, when he reads the final draft or the original draft of way Harold's story is going to go, he says, your death will give the story meaning. You know what I mean? Like, what's depressing about that?
Because it's a fucking story and this is an actual person. I had huge problems with that whole part of this movie. I had big problems with that because we're talking about a human being here and you're talking about a story that's going to be in a book that might make somebody millions of dollars. I don't know. But I had a huge problem with this. Now, he is a real person and we're belittling his life. His life is more important than a story to be told. Okay. I had big problems with it.
Setting that aside, I'm saying a story in which the character dies, but their death brings meaning to the story.
That's something else.
How is that depressing? How is that down?
It can be if that's what you're reading over and over and over again. I mean, if that's the only thing she does, mm-hmm. I'm not going to gravitate towards that. Mm. I might enjoy one or two of them, but I'm not going to... That's not something I'm going to willingly seek out all the time. I have enough depressing things happening in my life and stressful things happening in my life, you know, and it's not me personally in my inner group, but in the world, you know, sure. There's just so much stuff out there. When I read, I want to escape and be, you know, feel good and, you know, leave the chaos of this world behind when I read. And if I'm just reading about people that I grow to care and love in a story and I'm just knowing they're going to die, I'm not going to gravitate to that. I would not like doing that all the time.
Fair enough. So Harold calls Karen on the phone and he manages to get through to her by recounting her book, the one in which he is the main character. He recounts it to her over the phone. So they agree to meet in person, and she tells him that she's had writer's block, and only just recently has she started writing again. And that kind of coincides with when he started hearing the narration.
Mm-hmm.
She has an outline for the conclusion of the book. As I mentioned before, the book is called Death and Taxes, which I think is pretty funny.
That is an awesome title for an IRS agent. Also... Real quick, that is something that you've joked about a lot, that we need to buy a funeral home and have our tax office right next door and advertise it as death and taxes.
That's correct,
thing.
Yes. I do believe that the two go hand in hand, and because of the colloquialism that, you know, there's only two things in life that are for sure, but I do think that there's a comedy there. There's a little bit of black comedy there, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm.
But she hasn't really, so Karen hasn't really finished this. She's only got this skeleton of the story. So she hasn't written it yet. So it hasn't happened to Harold yet. Assuming that what she says is what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Which we kind of find out that it is, right?
Right, because you kind of glance, I think it's when he's showing it to Jules that you kind of see the first page. And if you kind of read it a little bit, it's basically the opening of the movie.
Right, yeah. So, Karen's assistant, Penny, suggests that Harold read the outline, but he can't bring himself to do it, so he takes it to Jules, like you said, and then after he reads that outline, Jules deems it Karen's masterpiece, but Harold's death is integral to the story.
This is where I think Jules is an ass. I hate this part. I really don't like this part, because he knows Harold, and he's basically saying, you know what, this is a book, and it's a story, but you have to die to make it worthwhile. I don't like that at all. I really don't like it.
See, I don't think Jules believes it.
But everything's been happening the way it is. And he basically says, you know, that you have to die in this book. I have a big problem with it.
He's still just talking about the book, because Jules doesn't believe that what's actually happening in the book is going to actually happen to Harold. I really don't think that he does.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, he's a very dark character to be like, yep, you have to die to make this story that I actually consider to be a masterpiece, to make it work.
Yeah.
right? Now, you could read this as God and the devil, right? If you're a Christian and you believe that sort of thing, but like a good deity and a bad deity, right? So you've got the good deity, Karen, who realizes, who recognizes that she has control over this, and she's actually racked with self-doubt when she realizes what she's been doing, because she's murdered a bunch of people now. Right?
Yeah, yeah, because now she's questioning, have these other people been people that have died?
Right.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you have Jules, who's like, you know, if it serves the purpose of the story, then so be it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting dichotomy there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So he says that the death in the story has deeper meaning when you consider the whole book. It gives the story purpose to have Harold die the way that he dies. So this gets Harold to read the outline finally. And then he brings it back to Karen and he says, I want you to write it. I want you to write it. I accept that this is my fate. And the way that you're going to do it is beautiful. So I'm okay with it. And with Karen at her typewriter, Harold goes about the rest of his life, ostensibly. He goes on some errands and he spends one last night with Anna, who is unaware that he's going to die the next day. In the morning, Harold gets up and goes about his routine, but something is different. Turns out when he asked the fellow bus rider a couple days ago, or a couple weeks ago at this point, I think, for the time, that time was 3 minutes fast. So Harold reaches the bus stop early enough that he sees a little boy on a bicycle fall in front of the bus as it approaches. Harold jumps out into the street, saves the boy, but ends up getting struck by the bus. However, Karen is unable to finish the sentence in which Harold dies. She feels guilty. She's got this PTSD or trauma from the idea that she may have actually killed all these protagonists.
Mm-hmm.
What I like about Emma Thompson's performance in this moment is it feels real.
Mm-hmm.
Like she
is good.
She really is a very good actor. She really does a good job of showing us that angst, that I did this, and unknowingly, of course. She doesn't know. She didn't set out to create these people and have them die.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my next question to you then is, did she just take control of people that already existed and puppet them? Or did Karen create these people when they have no life before that? So when Harold is imagining getting this bicycle, it's just a memory that she herself implanted.
Okay. So that part of this movie, I'm completely ignoring and not going to explore because it doesn't make sense. I mean, it's fiction. It's absolutely made up. There's no rationale or reasoning for how this would happen. Her book starts with when we pick up with him.
Right.
Yeah.
Did he exist before that?
No idea. And I don't care either.
No. Now, the next question that I have for you then is, if he didn't exist before then, is it okay if she kills him? Setting aside what happens in the movie, all of her stuff. So she creates it and it births this human into existence, and it's still not okay for her to kill him at the end?
Absolutely not.
Story? Okay.
I'm not okay with that.
Which is worse, her puppeting someone that already existed or her creating someone only to have them die, considering her track record? do you think's worse?
They're both bad.
They're both bad. Yeah, but why you don't think one of them is worse than the other?
I don't know.
Like, imagine living your life until a certain point where somebody decides to write a book about somebody that is you, and then all of a sudden you have no control over anything else, and it just happens. However, this person has decided it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You don't think that one's worse than the other?
Well, because the other one would be just as bad. You still have somebody who's being created and putting into a situation that they have no control over just to be, you know, taken out at the end for, you know, the writer's purposes. I'm not going to choose because I think they both suck.
Don't, Okay, so let's get meta here. Don't all characters suffer this fate? All literary characters, whether they be comics, novels,
yeah, yes, they film, they could suffer that fate. Yep,
right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They all suffer this fate mm-hmm. in one way, shape, or form.
But we're talking about somebody that's supposed to be a real person here, not just something that's on the storybook. You know?
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying, like, let's apply this theory to like other stuff. You know what I mean? Like I don't know. I mean, like, it's just an interesting thought, like, exercise for me to think about it as if this happened for Harold Crick in this movie,
mm-hmm.
and it happens to Harry Potter when what's-her-face, J.K. Rowling, writes his story. Like, does Harry Potter exist somewhere in the world? Is there a Harry Potter out in the world that's being manipulated by J.K. Rowling?
Obviously not.
Well, all right. Well, this isn't going to go anywhere. All right.
I mean, I get what you're saying, in all pretend world. I mean, sure, I guess you could go there. But I mean, it's not really something that, like, this movie, when it was first going, I'm like, okay, are we going to find out, like, how this happened? But we don't. And I'm okay with that. Now, normally I'm not. You know me. I'm normally like, okay, well, why is this? Where is that? Blah, blah, blah. But if you just take this from start to finish without that background knowledge, I think it still works. I think it still works.
I don't disagree. Really, for me, though, it's a philosophical question. Can you change your fate by resigning yourself to it? And that's really all that Harold did, right? Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
All he did was resign himself to his fate. Say, okay, I know what's going to happen. I'm okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
Can you really change your fate by just accepting who you are?
Possibly.
Or does that require you to change something about yourself? Do you know what I mean? Like, although really, when you think about it, this does change something about Harold.
Mm-hmm.
His acceptance of that fate changes the, because he is a by the numbers kind of person, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't add up, you know, he's not going to be okay with this. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So like the idea that something is outside of his control is probably anathema to him. And so the change there is this resignation of free will almost.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a weird, weird fucking thing to consider, right?
So do you think he would have still felt the same way if he died in another manner besides saving a child's life? Like, let's say he walked out in front of the bus by accident. Or let's say he was involved in, like, you know, random gunfire or something. Or ended up getting cancer. Do you think he still would have chose to go ahead and write me off that way?
I don't think so. So maybe he really isn't resigning himself to fate. This isn't resigning yourself to fate if you look at it that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I feel like, and maybe he would have, I don't know, depending on how she wrote the story, but right. I feel like the big thing here was he was saving a child.
He was saving someone, yeah. And Jules told him, hey, your death will have meaning. Your death will mm-hmm. make this story mean more, right? Mm-hmm. Now, we don't actually know what more did it mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the story we saw on the screen.
Well, it was altered because Karen made this decision to not kill him, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't know what would have happened, how that would have affected things.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It's just this weird thing where it's like, on one hand, it's giving up your ability to make your own destiny. And on the other hand, it's not really, because Harold made that decision. He could have just as easily gone back to her and said, because she was already traumatized by this whole situation. He could have gone back to her and said, no, don't do this. I don't want to die. And she would have burned the script. You know she would have. Karen's not an evil person by any stretch of the imagination, right?
She didn't know that this was affecting somebody.
Exactly. It was definitely affecting her, though, because we see her effect. Notice that her that she was a wreck until she was able to wreck someone else's life. When she finally figured out how to kill Harold, mm-hmm. that's when she became okay again. She was smoking too much and having, like, you know, spitting stuff up, and, like, you know, she was having these, this question of, like, am I doing this? Am I doing the right thing here? Am I doing a good work here? Or is this just, you know, me blowing smoke again? You know, like, mm-hmm. she is juxtaposed with Harold mm-hmm. in that way, I think. And I think that's what makes her a compelling character, is that her reclamation of her destiny is at the expense of someone else, and she recognizes that. So we have two people making decisions that are good for other people rather than good for themselves. Because Jules says, you know, this will make millions and millions of dollars if you sell this book. You know, he says this is going to be a very successful book. This is your masterpiece. Mm-hmm. And she's ready to scrap it because she doesn't want to murder someone. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously, Harold decides to save the kid. Anyway. I feel like we could talk about this more, but I'm getting the sense that you don't necessarily want to talk about this more, so I'm going to move on. So, Harold wakes up in the hospital, and he learns that his wristwatch was destroyed in the accident, and a shard of glass from its face lodged in his ulnar artery, which saved him from bleeding to death. Quite the rewrite there, right?
Yeah.
Like, how did that shard of glass get from the face to the opposite side of his wrist?
And I also feel like this makes that wristwatch even more important, because she keeps bringing this wristwatch up through this whole thing.
The wristwatch has personality. The wristwatch is a character in the book, in the movie, in the book, really, mm-hmm. when you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Karen goes and visits Jules? Karen goes and visits Jules at his university office, and she gives him the new manuscript, and he reads it. And he says he thinks that the new ending weakens the story, but Karen tells him that the book was about a man who did not know that he was going to die. But since Harold accepted his fate, that makes him the kind of person who deserves to live. And while she's speaking, we actually get her as the quote-unquote narrator again, kind of showing us Harold's new life, his new lease on life, mm-hmm. living with Anna and being in love. And the camera ends on the heroic wristwatch that saved his life and has never been fixed, mm-hmm. sitting on his dresser. And that's the end of the movie.
The end.
So the real hero in this was the wristwatch.
Yeah, so right? I do have a question.
Yeah.
So we get the gist of what this book is about here. Is this a book that you would even be interested in reading?
What we get the gist of it? It's about him auditing a person and making a decision to save a kid. And
so, yeah, it's about an auditor who goes to audit somebody. They fall in love, and then he saves the kid's life at the end.
I feel like we don't have the full context of the story, because when we first meet Karen, she's at the end of the story. She's writing the end of the story.
Right, but it's the beginning of the movie is the first page of the book. If you go to when Jules has the book and you see the first page, it's typing up the beginning of the movie.
That's a tough one, because it doesn't sound like the full story. You know
I
mean?
Know, like, as I was going through this, I'm like, this sounds like a boring book.
So I will say this, that there are books that will make you think, that are, you know, about seemingly arbitrary things, but they have more, you know, there's more to them. There's stuff under the surface, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, underlying themes. Mm-hmm. And ideas and plot threads and stuff like that. And I feel like this is one of those, if you read the book. You know how when you read a book and then you see the movie that the book was adapted to? Mm-hmm. The movie isn't as good as the book. That's mm-hmm. because there's all that underlying stuff. It's not just because you can see inside the narrator's head. It's because there's so much other stuff. You say there's things in Harry Potter that didn't make it into the movie that mm-hmm. flesh things out, right?
Yep.
That's what we're missing here, is we're only seeing the movie version.
Okay, but if you were to read the Cliff Notes version of this on the back of the book, what this was about. Well, okay, fine. The description of the book on the back of it, and you read this description, you've got this IRS auditor auditing a baker. They develop a relationship. And then he has a tragic end.
Why would they tell you in the at the end? Why would they tell you in the description of the book that he would have a tragic end?
They're not. But right. I mean, okay, so your description is you're following an IRS auditor and he's auditing a baker. Are you going to read this?
No. You left out an integral part. An IRS agent who is auditing a baker and they fall in love. That's the story. His fate is not part of that description.
But she's not known for being a romantic writer, right? She just writes tragedies.
If you are reading this description as someone who follows her books, you know that there is something afoot. There's more to this story than just Harold meets Anna, they love each other, and that's that.
Yeah.
If you know that, like Jules does, every book that she's ever written is a tragedy, no matter what this description says, you know that there's more to it. And just like anything else, you read the back of any book that I've got sitting on the bookshelf over here, mm-hmm. it doesn't give you the whole story. It just gives you enough to get you interested, mm-hmm. right? Does an IRS agent dating a baker, an unexpected asymmetrical romance, does that appeal to you? Not me.
No.
But it might appeal to some people.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
So,
I don't know. I just thought, boy, I don't know. Obviously, what makes this story interesting is the relation with the narrator that we end up with in this.
Yeah.
But the book itself, I feel like, would be kind of a blob book.
Fair enough. I mean, I'm not going to debate that. It just doesn't seem like something I'd want to read anyway.
Yeah.
But if I was already a fan of hers, then maybe, you know, I might. You never know. Okay, do you have any additional notes? Anything extra that you wanted to talk about that was in your notes that we didn't get through as we were going through this?
The only other thing that I found that we haven't talked about yet is that the last names of all the characters are the names of mathematicians, scientists, engineers, and artists.
Huh, interesting. Okay, didn't know that.
But that is the only other note that we have not talked about.
Okay. So I really empathize with Emma Thompson's character of Karen in this movie a lot. And I've been pondering this. Now, I've written some stuff here and there in my life. Imagine that every time you write something, it births humans, people, creatures, whatever, right? And you now have control over this. Kurt Vonnegut did great with this kind of stuff, with the idea that he was God to the people that he created. Emma Thompson's character is God to Harold Crick, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah. So, but imagine finding out that you don't even know that you're God, but you're God to this character or to your characters. Imagine finding out that that's what you are. You thought you were a writer. Turns out you're a deity. And not just that, but a mass murdering deity, someone that's like just slaughtered dozens of people because, you know, that's where the story went. What kind of a fucking weird mind fuck would that be, right?
Yeah.
I want to go
back to that.
That's
why she was laying on the floor like, just distraught.
It wrecked her whole life. It broke her paradigm up just as much as Harold finding out that he was in a book broke him up.
Yeah.
You know? I love that there is this dichotomy between these two characters in that one is the creator and one is the creation, but they both face similar circumstances. They're finding out something that changes the paradigm of their world to such a great degree and so suddenly that it is a shock to the system, something that completely like breaks you out of whatever funk you were in, whatever world you were in, whatever mind space you were in, as much as dumping a bucket of ice water on your head would, you know, bring you into the present. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I really find interesting about these two characters, that they both experience that, but from different angles of the same. It's the same point. It's the exact same point in space time, but they're both on other sides of the table. You know, love it. Anyway. So, any other notes? Any alternate cast? Anything like that you wanted to talk about?
No, nope, nothing. Didn't find anything.
All right. Well,
I don't think this was a big enough movie to put all that stuff out there. I did tons of looking. I couldn't find anything like that.
Do we know what box office numbers were for it, or like how it was received? Like, I know that it was relatively positively reviewed.
Yeah, I think the reviews are good on it. I don't know how well it did in the box office, though. trying to see if I can find that.
It says here it opened number 4 behind Borat, Santa Claus 3, and Flushed Away. So it opened 4th, grossed $13.4 million. Widest release was 2,270 theaters. Outside the U.S., it grossed another $13 million for a total worldwide of $53.6 million. I would not call this a financial success. So I get it. Yeah, that would make sense why there wouldn't be a lot of back info on there.
Yeah.
Why don't we jump into our ratings then, since we're talking about ratings. Jennifer, how many stars are you going to give Stranger Than Fiction?
I'm going to go with a 4-star on this.
Nice.
I really liked this movie, okay. And it was one that I kept thinking about afterwards, which a lot of times I watch a movie, I move on, I'm done. but every once in a while, I'll come across something that I kind of think about and like, okay, I want to go back and watch that again. So I've seen it twice now. Previous to this, I hadn't seen it at all.
Didn't even know it existed.
Didn't know it existed. The actors, I thought, all did a great job. Like, Will Ferrell did really good at this serious. I mean, he had enough comedy in there, but it wasn't his normal over-the-top comedy. So he did really well with that. Emma Thompson, holy shit, she's just amazing. Dustin Hoffman, same thing. He's amazing.
He is
just great. Queen Latifah, I wish she had more in here. I really liked what she was given. I wish she had more. Maggie Gyllenhaal, loved her in the scene. I told you.
You were going to say Gyllenhaal.
I was going to go Gyllenhaal. Yep. I thought she was great. So the main cast, all of them, awesome. They're just awesome. The story, I think, was great. It was well told. We care about these people. Mm-hmm. They give us reasons to care about these people. This movie wasn't overly long. It was a little less than 2 hours, but yet we still got enough of these characters that I gave a shit what was happening to them.
Yeah.
Like we talked about before, we don't know how this happened, if she created him or if all of a sudden she just picked it up somewhere and all of a sudden this is him. We don't know, but I don't care.
Yeah, real quick. It's irrelevant how it happened. I just wanted to kind of get your feeling on how you thought it happened.
Yeah, and I don't think it matters at all. I did have passing of, I wonder if they're going to explain that. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of it, I'm like, I don't care.
Right.
I don't need to know how it happened. Right. It's just a story told front to end. Mm-hmm. We're good to go. I like the characters. I like Harold. I like Karen. I like Jules. You know, I like Anna. They were all great. The thing I don't like about Jules' character, but I think it was important to have in here for that conflict, was the part I talked about with putting the story above Harold's life. I really don't like that. That really bothers me a lot.
Sure.
But it's part of his character, and I still think it was important because it gave us the interaction for Harold to then read it, decide that he was going to do, you know, go ahead and kill me, and then Karen talking to Jules later. It's important that that happened that way.
Let me ask you a question real quick. Does a character that is likable, does everything that they do have to be something that's likable, or can they do something that is kind of vile, really, when you think about it from Jules' perspective?
Yeah, no, and that's fine.
Is he still a character that you can relate to?
Is a good character.
Okay.
And I still think overall that he's probably a good person character. He just, in his brain, he's this literary guy. And so, you know, to him, the story's everything, you know, type of thing. And so he has a huge flaw there that he's willing to put the story above a person's life. And a person that he seems to get along with really well, too. So that's the part I really didn't like. The romance in the story, it wasn't overly done, but I loved it. I loved the building of the relationship of those two. It was very sweet. Will Ferrell and Maggie Gyllenhaal have great chemistry. I thought it was fun to watch them.
Not something I ever thought I'd hear.
I know. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
But yeah, they did. They had really good chemistry. The only last thing I want to mention is this whole time towards the end, I'm like, oh my God, if they kill off Harold, I'm going to absolutely hate this movie. It's going to be the worst movie ever. And honestly, if that would have happened, I would have given this movie a 0.
Really?
So much so, because of the whole putting the story above a person's life, I would have hated that so much that I would never have watched this again. So thank God they didn't do that, because I would have had huge problems with this movie. So okay, anyways, I've rambled on long enough. How about you? What would you rate this?
I'm gonna put this one at a solid 3.5 stars. 3.5, I think, is a pretty good rating for this movie. It's not without its problems. It's not without its faults. It is a cute movie. It definitely has great performances, as you mentioned, by all of the cast. Unexpectedly, Will Ferrell. I wish Will Ferrell would do more dramatic roles.
Who knows if he's even offered them? He should be.
Yeah, I mean, based off of this, I mean, he's no Robin Williams, don't get me wrong, but he can hold his own. I mean, here he is going up against people like Dustin Hoffman, for Christ's sake. Dustin mm-hmm. Hoffman, one of like the greatest living actors of our generation, right? Mm-hmm. And he held his own against him,
yeah.
You know? So I think the actors did a great job. I think the story is quirky and cute. It made me think of movies like Being John Malkovich, or I almost said Stranger Than Fiction, but that's this movie.
It makes me think of Stranger Than Fiction.
This movie makes me think of it. I like to think about this movie when I'm thinking about this movie.
What about like The Truman Show?
Yes,
I kind of made comparisons to that a little bit.
Yeah, it is a examining my life kind of a movie, yeah. You know? And so you get this stuff like Lost in Translation. There are better movies like Lost in Translation or Being John Malkovich, movies that are better constructed, better put together, mm-hmm. better scripted than this, equally well acted. This is no slouch, though. But it's just not to me, it shouldn't be higher rated for me, because there are other movies that do the same thing, but they do that a little bit better. They just mm-hmm. they have a tighter script. They have a better concept. And I do really love the idea that both of these main characters, both Karen and Harold, are experiencing the exact same moment in time, but from completely opposite ends of the spectrum. Harold is the created, Karen is the creator, and they are both having this moment of doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And they share this. They share this in common. There's this commonality where it makes me think of that painting, and I can't remember who the hell painted it, but it's the God reaching down to touch the human's hand, touch fingertips with the human.
Oh yeah.
I want to say Michelangelo, but I'm not sure. I don't know. Fucking know. My art teachers from high school would probably just disown me at this point. But that's what it makes me think of, is the, you know, God touching the fingertip of his creation, and that's what this movie feels like to me. It feels like a Vonnegut book come to life in that way. 3.5 stars. Mm-hmm. That's where I am.
All right.
So yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. All right. Now that was good. I will definitely rewatch this movie.
I'll watch it again too. Now that I know it's out there, I will watch it again.
100% likable. Very likable movie.
Yes.
Okay, so next,
we're going to do a movie loosely based off my life. No, just kidding. It's called The Accountant.
Yeah, it's totally. I mean, this is exactly. Guys, this woman, sharpshooter, like from like 3 miles.
Okay, 20 feet away, I can't hit what I'm aiming at. So let's be honest here. I'm terrible at it.
Right, right, yeah.
But this one, just real quick, we have seen this one before. We took the staff to, we had a movie day and watched this one day. Yeah,
we had a movie day and watched this movie in the office. So yeah, The Accountant, the one with Ben Affleck, next week right here on the couch. Thanks for listening, everybody.
You have been listening to A View from the Couch. Visit our new website, thecouchpod.com, where you will find a calendar of upcoming releases, links to our podcast episodes, and you can sign up for our upcoming newsletter. You can also email our host directly at view@thecouchpod.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice. Every review helps us get noticed. Thanks for listening.